Hello and welcome to this week's installment of the Nucleus Investment Insights. My name is Mark, and as this is my first time running the webinar show, if you want to call it that, so do be kind in your feedback to me. Today's agenda, essentially, is we're going to be looking at the earnings. Will the earnings boom continue? We're going to take a look at a top-down view of the U.S. earnings, the regional earnings, sector earnings, inflation, individual stocks, and the investment outlook going forward. Now, so far, over half the companies in the S&P 500 have reported actual results for the Q2 of 2021. To date, of these companies, 88% have reported actual earnings per share, or what is known as EPS, above estimates, which is above the five-year average of 75%. If 88% is the final percentage for the entire quarter, it'll mark the highest percentage of S&P 500 companies reporting a positive earning per share surprise since 2008. European equities are scaling new peaks as positive earnings updates outweigh risks from the spread of the Delta virus variant. China regulatory crackdown and inflationary pressures are also present. However, some market players expect that market volatility will pick up in the coming months as investors become more and more selective with equities trading at all-time historical highs. With stocks in Europe and the US that are at or around record highs, equities have weathered concerns over the spread of the Delta virus, and as expectations for continued stimulus and solid earnings have propelled these shares higher, hence the risk. So, and here to share their thoughts on the local and global earnings season and how this may influence your portfolios or our portfolios as well, we're joined online with our head analyst, Radek Zeleny. Good afternoon to you.
Hi.
And we're also joined by Nucleus Wealth's head of investments, Damien Klassen. And before we launch into the show, just a quick reminder before we get started, if you haven't already subscribed and clicked on the notification bell, please do so, and you'll be notified when we go live or have a new webinar to watch. And or you can follow us on your preferred podcast platform. So, gentlemen, I will hand over to you right now.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Good to have you on. So we've also, you know, as we brought Radek on, because Radek spends most of his days here at Nucleus looking at stocks, and you know, we're also, as we're we've been reveling in a short-term lockdown-free Melbourne, we thought we'd bring Radek, who's Sydney-based, and just to make all our listeners up there feel loved, and that somebody at Nucleus is doing it tough as well.
That's right. This is my outing for the week.
That's right. So basically what I wanted to talk about was we want to start with the earnings, sort of looking very much top down, and then work through sort of some of the individual sectors and look at things like inflation and what it actually means for the outlook. So I might just sort of jump straight in, because you know, as Mark alluded to a little bit in the intro, we've got these we've got the upgrades, and so I've got a chart there showing just the net revision, so the number of upgrades versus the number of downgrades, and this is for the S&P 500. We're going to focus a fair bit on the US just because there's lots of long-term data on that, but I will, once we get through and we start talking individual stocks and sectors later on, I'll open it up to more sort of a global view. But you can see here where we are in July at the far right-hand side of the graph, and it's basically record numbers of upward revisions in terms of earnings. And that's been going on for a considerable period of time now. So it's not just a single bounce back, that this is a genuine earnings are very, very strong, and the net revisions continue to be upwards to all those numbers. There's jumping to the next slide. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the different periods. So we've got here the 2021 earnings forecasts. You can see as a blue line there, sort of in the middle of the graph. And so what that's showing is that at the start of 2020, where the forecasts were, and then you had that big drop in the graph as the coronavirus hit and everyone sort of downgraded what their expectations for earnings were. And then we've seen that the rise. And so now expectations are that 2021 earnings are actually going to be higher than what people expected before the coronavirus hit. Then you can see that, and in particular, there's that sharp hook upwards in the last few weeks as earnings reporting season has started. That it's taken this another leg up. So there's another 5 to 10% worth of growth expectations sort of factored in there, or upwards revisions. And those upward revisions have also happened to the 2022 and the 2023 numbers that you can see on that graph as well. And then there's this red line throughout the period, which is the bringing through the 12-month forward earnings. So what that is that's basically a smooth average of always looking at the next 12 months, because that's a much better feel over time. So that's, we often will focus on that number because you gradually move through the 2021 numbers, and right now we've only got less than half a year to go. And so what the smooth line will be doing is taking 4 or 5 months of 2021 and adding 7 or 8 months of 2022, and then gradually we'll just gradually shift into the next version. So we quite often use those interchangeably, and we'll look at both those numbers as we go through. But the red line is the one that sort of gives you a better indication over time how things are going. But often looking at the individual components can be important.
Is that that's a calendar year or the?
They're calendar years, yeah. So that's an important point. Is that all companies, or well, not all companies, but a lot of companies have different balance dates and will report to different numbers. And so there's a fair bit of smoothing and things like that going on within those numbers, where some companies will be. Have actually finished their 2021 earnings already, and other ones are actually halfway through. If a company that had a February or a January balance date is halfway through its 2021 numbers already. But the numbers we're seeing here are sort of an adjusted figure to put everyone on the same basis. The next one is then just showing how these forecasts go over time, because what I really want to highlight is what we're seeing is very atypical in terms of the upgrades we're seeing, and in particular to 2022. So we can see this next chart is a bunch of lines, the blue lines that are showing each year and how the earnings progressions go over the year. So you can see over the last decade or so, it's generally been downgrades. So 2013, 14, 15, 16, every year as the further we get into the year, the more we see earnings downgrades over the time period. 2018 was a bit different in terms of that was when we saw a lot of the Trump tax cuts. And so a lot of that jump was tax cut driven. 2019, you sort of had the initial positive, but then obviously faded away later on in the year. So it is pretty typical to see earnings forecasts fade as time goes on. And that's what's been quite different about this season. The other thing I'd say about the whole earnings surprise versus not surprise is companies, it is a little bit of a game. Companies love to come in and report positive earnings. And so and they love to beat the market. So as Mark said, was saying, on average 75% of people beat the market. But the thing is, companies will talk the market down first. So about a month or so, they'll get the numbers a month or so before they're going to report, and they'll see the preliminary numbers, and they won't be finished the accounting, but they'll know roughly where it's going to come. And they'll go out and talk to analysts and even make press releases to say that where they're expecting the numbers. And so the actual beat that you see on the day, to me, is a bit meaningless, because has this company just talked everyone down and then beaten the market? But if you compare it to where the numbers were a month before that, they might have actually been well below that. So for example, analysts are forecasting 10 cents a share. The company talks everyone down into bring it back to 9 cents a share, and then they come in with 9.2 cents. And they're like, oh, the company beat. But you're like, well, yeah, they beat it on the day, but they didn't beat it from where it was a couple of weeks earlier. So when we talk about the numbers, which I tend to look at, I tend to want to try and look at earnings surprise over at least about a month before the company actually reports, just to make sure that it's actually genuine surprise and it's not just the company sort of talking the numbers down to in order to come up then with a beat.
Just on that point, you can also see that in the share prices. They don't react that much to these beats on the day.
Yeah.
It needs a real beat, and then you see a real movement in the share prices.
Mm. And the other, yeah, and that's another thing I'll often look at is what happens, and we've got a few charts showing it later, is what happens to 2021 and 2022 numbers, like the next years, because if you're seeing that companies coming out with these massive beats, but then all the analysts are downgrading their numbers, you know, it might just be a funny tax thing that happened to hit, or it might be something weird where they got a one-off benefit from a sale of an asset or something like that, something that's not sustainable. But then when the analysts actually dig into the numbers and look at what's going on at the bottom line, they're all downgrading numbers. So, you know, I guess your best case scenario is they beat the numbers versus where it was, say, a month earlier. Beat the numbers on the day is always is good as well, but then you get earnings upgrades and you know, revenue upgrades and things like that, gives you the real positive ones. So the next thing I wanted to show then as well was the upgrades, the percentage growth, right? And it's it's a similar type of line to chart to what we had before, but now it's the colored lines, and it's showing the percentage growth that analysts are expecting. And there's this real bias for about 10% to be the number. And I think as a default analyst, that's basically where analysts start most years, is you can see that every year that over the last few, you've got that sort of movement across there from the expected growth is around about 10%, and then it goes in one direction. It either goes higher like it did in 2018 or goes lower like it did in pretty much every other year, from 2012 onwards. And that's a pretty consistent trend. You also notice there's quite often this little tick upwards in terms of numbers, in terms of the second year forecasts. So what often happens is analysts will downgrade, so that they might come out and go, oh, things are bad, going to be bad in 2020. And so they'll downgrade 2020 by 10%. And they go, oh yeah, but that's things aren't going to be as bad in 2021, so I'll only downgrade my 2021 numbers by 5%. But what they've really done is increase the growth rate from that 2020 to 2021, and they don't work that out for a few months before that gets closer to the second year, and then they start downgrading those numbers. So quite often with all those lines as well, you'll see close to the start of the line there'll be like this movement upwards as you get those analyst forecasts come through, and then it all drops away once they start seriously considering what the profit's going to be like over that time period. And so while the 2022, the growth rate's been coming down, we saw in some of those prior graphs that 2022, the actual numbers are going up. It's more that the increase in 2021 numbers has been so dramatic that it's sort of now up over 40%, is that what's really happening is the future's here early. So basically, you know, there's this bounce back that was being expected. And you know, the company might have been reporting whatever, $1 a share of earnings, that fell down to 50 cents. And then the thought was, yeah, it'll get back to $1 by 2023. But now that's being brought forward. It's like, oh, okay, actually it's gonna reach back to that $1 by 2022 instead. And so that's what we're really seeing in terms of the analyst forecasts, is that bring forward.
Also, an interesting point to remember is that America's report quarterly, so you get always, every 3 months, you're getting an updated number, unlike here in Australia where you only get it twice a year. Mm. So, yeah, the data is actually better for the US market in that sense.
You know, yeah, yeah. And it's sort of the flip side is that I think there's probably more of a focus from US analysts on very short-term movements, in terms of being, what's the next quarter beat? Can they do it? You know, as opposed to some of the longer term. So there are positives and negatives, but you're certainly right that the data you get is a much much steadier flow of information and much more up to date as to what's really going on, and quicker as well. So you know, not that many ASX companies have reported for the end of financial year yet in Australia, but most of the US companies have reported. So because they report four times a year, it'll usually come out within the, you know, whatever, 3 to 6 weeks after the result date, whereas the ASX ones tend to be a bit later. And then the only other one then is just keeping in mind that there's a pricing thing here as well. So, you know, on the graph, we've got that on the left-hand side of the next graph, we've got the movements in the 12-month forward earnings versus the movements in price. And there's this huge correlation between the two, as you'd expect, that when earnings are going up, the price goes up. And then on the right-hand graph, we've got that as a ratio of the price versus the earnings. And what's interesting, certainly in the last 6 months or so, is that while markets have been expensive, they're actually been getting cheaper, even though they're going up. And that's because the earnings have been going up faster than what prices have been going up. So again, and this is the US, that earnings are actually now, that the market is about 10% cheaper than what it was a few months ago, because earnings have risen so much faster than what the prices have actually gone up. So that's your, I guess your best bull case is that earnings can keep going up and justify the current prices. The only other thing I wanted to talk about on this slide is that all these figures I've been speaking about so far have all been the weighted average of stocks in the index. And what that means is that it's a higher weight for the bigger stocks. So what Apple does or what Microsoft does makes a bigger difference to the numbers like 100 or 200 times bigger than the numbers than some of the smaller stocks in the index. And so sometimes when you look at numbers like this, it can be misleading, because you might have a few individual stocks doing really, really well, but the average stock is actually doing badly. And so that's why what we also do is we try and break it down by percentiles of stocks. And that's what I've sort of got on this next chart or next table, is looking at the each of the various percentiles. So the 50 in the middle with the lines around it, that's the median stock. So and then we've got the what's happening to the 10th percentile, which is the worst 10% of stocks, and then the 90th percentile, which is the best 10% of stocks, and then the 25th and 75th. So on this one, I guess I just wanted to highlight that the numbers that really are the second quarter numbers, the growth rates are pretty much meaningless, because you had such a question about less about how much it's gone up, because it was the base effect. Second quarter last year was terrible. And so if it was really terrible or if it was just mildly terrible, we'll make a difference as to where the numbers are. And to use that example, you know, if a company is earning a dollar in earnings, whether it fell to 50 cents before bouncing back to a dollar, or whether it only fell to 70 cents before bouncing back to a dollar, is a little bit of a moot point. It's more about some of the longer term ones. And so that second graph is probably more illustrative, where the second table below is where we're actually looking at the surprise, in terms of we looked a month ago, US and Canadian companies are actually coming in, the median stock is coming in about 12% higher than what people were expecting a month ago. Even better in developed Asia, and you know, not that far behind in Europe, in terms of what you're seeing. And then if you jump to the next one, we're looking at the upgrades to forecasts. So this, and keep in mind again, this is just in the last month, we've seen a 5% upgrade to the median stock. And even if you look at the worst 25% of stocks, you're actually still seeing upgrades. You're still seeing, you know, 1 or 2% upgrade to numbers, despite that being the sort of the worst quarter of stocks. So earnings are very, very strong. And it's pretty broadly spread. If you look at the sectors again on that same basis, we've got a big chart looking at each of the individual GIC sectors, which most people tend to look at. We have some issues about the consistency of stocks within these sectors. It can be a bit confusing. Take the communication services sector there on the far right, which is going very well, but it's sort of split between things like Facebook and Google and some of these technology stocks that are doing really, really well, and a bunch of telecommunication stocks that are pretty low growth and not a lot of not a lot of strength in terms of those. So probably the two main ones there I'd highlight is consumer staples and utilities are the ones that have been doing the worst. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the stocks within that sector in a minute. And energy in particular has been really seeing some massive upgrades, but the prices, which we'll look at in a minute, are actually being headed in a different direction. So there's it does, just because you are seeing strong earnings for a sector and even upgrades, doesn't always necessarily mean there's price rises. In particular in commodity stocks, it's usually in most of the other sectors that will be the case. So if you see industrials with strong earnings, you will often see that flow through the prices. But commodity stocks, you don't always see a one-to-one correlation with those. And we've certainly seen a disconnect in the energy stocks recently.
I might just chime in here and mention that this reporting season, we've seen that the earnings surprises have been rewarded more than normal, and the negative surprises have actually haven't been punished as badly. Sort of points to the fact that even the market's quite bullish or quite facilitating for these earnings, because I guess they're in a recovery mode. So it's interesting to see how the market's reacting to this. So,
And that sort of leads to the next one, this buy sell hold graph. I might let you talk through that buy sell hold, Radek, about which sectors analysts are liking and not liking in terms of consensus.
Yeah, so this one here shows the percentage of buy sell holds, I guess, for the various sectors. So over 50% is obviously bullish, but I think the more important one to look at is the red line. So as that rises, because analysts are naturally bullish, so it's hard to get a sell call out of an analyst usually. So when they do, that's usually more significant than a buy call. So you can see consumer staples is one of the sectors where it's grown over this last 3 months, and real estate and financials. And when we look at the actual results, they were two sectors that were maybe a little bit disappointing this reporting season. Whereas at the other end of the spectrum, I guess energy, the analysts continue to be bullish on the sector, with they're probably projecting higher energy prices moving out. So that's basically the important sectors.
But prices have been moving the opposite direction. So it's a good example as well. Analysts are quite bullish on that sector, but prices haven't been headed in that direction. So that, I guess, this is generally from stockbrokers, whereas people actually out buying the assets haven't actually been buying energy. There's been a bit of a disconnect. So banks, do you want to jump in banks as well, Renick?
So banks, we had interesting reporting season. They did reasonably well, but it was due to negative provisioning offsets, because revenue was actually quite poor over the quarter.
So do you want to explain the negative provisioning
offsets? Yeah, what that means is, getting some echo here. Last year, when things were bad, the banks would put bad debt provisions, expecting businesses to go bankrupt. And what's happened is it hasn't been as bad as they thought. So now they can remove those provisions and use it to buff their profits. So this is essentially what's been happening. You can see in this graph here in 2Q20, that was a huge amount. And gradually over the period, they've been releasing those provisions, especially in the first quarter. But in this quarter, that's now diminishing. And as someone said, there's only so many times you can milk that cow. So that's going to virtually disappear over the next two quarters.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the rest of the earnings have been from trading and fees, which continue to be strong. But the net interest and the growth of the loan book has been quite poor. So I think that came as a bit of a surprise for the market. And as a result, the financial sector did not do that well in this quarter.
And that's a good example of what we call low quality earnings or non-recurring earnings, and the type of things that you usually want to try and strip out of your forecasts when you're or the numbers. So they're the types of things, yeah, we'll try and strip that out so you can get a cleaner look at the numbers, because as Reddick said, you know, once you might have provisioned for it, you can write them back if they don't happen. But once they're gone, they're gone. They're not you can't keep doing that year after year. And then the other big one, obviously, in consumer staples and inflation in particular, Reddick.
Yeah, that was the big surprise. I guess that's the big theme of this this first half of this year has been inflation, and this seems to be the first sector to be raising the flag and using it as an excuse. Well, all these companies essentially have seen margin compression, and they're all blaming input costs. So I won't go through the comments, but as you read those comments, they're all blaming transport costs and soybean oil costs and all sorts of things. So, and I think that was a bit of a wake-up call for the market, and a lot of these stocks, which actually did quite well across the 2020 with the COVID scare, because they produced things like tissue paper and things, they're now no longer as sought out as perhaps they were.
Yeah. So that sort of leads into this part about, is this inflation real or not? And as you can see, I've seen lots of different studies, a lot of people doing analysis of just the text of company analysis and things like that coming out, talking about how many more times CEOs have been talking about inflation versus not talking about inflation. And some people are using this as a reason to say, oh, this is why inflation's here and it's here to stay, is that all companies are talking about it. We've obviously talked about a lot about this whole inflation super cycle and inventory super cycle being like a very short term push on inflation, and that one more reason for it being transitory. And I just wanted to sort of show a few, and this is a little bit anecdata in terms of what we're showing, but I think there's certainly some messages within the stocks once you dig into to what's going on that sort of show that it does still seem to me that it is just an inventory super cycle. So our poster child we always bring up is the lumber prices, which sort of shot up from $300 or $400 a ton to $1,700 a ton at one stage. And now they're coming back to sort of well below. They're sort of more than halved from their peaks, and sort of heading back towards that sort of $500-$600, back towards where they used to trade. And so so Reddick spoke about the and I've got a bunch of stocks on here. And apologies, they're a bit small for anyone. You might need to zoom in on a few of these, but let me talk through a few of them. If I look at that thing that people complaining about food prices, a lot of food prices going up, and I've pulled out sort of two of the big food stocks there on the left, second from the top, Archer Daniels Midland and Bunge, and they're what we can see is they've actually seen 20% upgrades to 2023 numbers and decent upgrades to 2022 numbers as well, and I guess it's that where I come back and go, well, it's pretty hard to, you got some companies complaining, hey, food prices are going up, we've got food inflation, and so inflation's entrenched and we're going to lose all this money. And on the flip side, the people actually producing the food are coming out and saying, hey, we're going to upgrade our earnings by 20 or 30% because we're getting all these cost price rises through. And so, there is questions about sustainability. If it's just going to margins, then they're the types of things, in my mind, will get competed away. If I saw that these food companies weren't getting the profits themselves, then I'd be more concerned, because I'd be saying, oh, well, if they're getting eaten away by cost increases as well, then that's the type of inflation you can see continuing. But if it's inflation, if there's not a lot of inflation at the bottom part, and then it's sort of the further you go up, the supply chain, you're seeing inflation, then it's just the people at the bottom increasing their margins. So there's that side of it. The other one you can see there's a similar type of factor as well for another one, the building stocks. So let me jump back to talk the transport. That was the other one I wanted to talk, which is the top right. So everyone's talking about increased transport costs, and I've just got the four or five of the biggest transport stocks out there that have reported so far, and they're all seeing earnings upgrades, 10 to 20% earnings upgrades across both 2022 and 2023. And so I guess it's that same part. You know, you can complain about if you're a Knight Swift or you're an Old Dominion, and you're telling people, oh, sorry, guys, you know, got to increase costs because I'm just passing through all these other things. Might sound good and believable given the environment, but if that means you're increasing your profits by 20 or 30%, then it sounds more like you're just using the cost increases to put through some margin changes. And so again, just one more sign that it's a good thing for the sector and not complaining about it from a company perspective, but I think for us it's a sign that it's more the inflation from transport is more likely to be transitory than everlasting, because now all these guys have much bigger incentive to go out and increase capacity, and because they're making better margins out of it. A few of the
price drop there in the energy sector seems to indicate that the market believes that these high oil prices might not be, continuing.
Yeah, to stay. Yes, yeah, so that's sort of the bottom right, second from the bottom on the right. There's whatever it is, half a dozen or so oil stocks there who've all seen 20 to 30%. And then some of these are even go off the end of that scale. You know, we've stopped it at 30% there because some of them go even higher. It's to see that all those stocks with such large upgrades, but then prices are actually going back the other direction. And I think there's certainly been a disconnect between the stock prices and the oil price, which tends to be that the market's looking at the current oil price and thinking, well, it might last for a year or two, but it's going to come back over time, and current prices aren't sustainable. So, certainly that's what energy prices have been saying. And that's where we've been underweight that whole sector for some time now. And not an area where we're looking to try and jump back in and try and pick the bottom of this one. So the valuations are certainly improving again in that sector. You know, if you've got 30% upgrades to your profits and earnings down, then the stocks are looking cheaper. But I just caution that in energy and materials, there's not always that same correlation between earnings and price, because a lot of it is based on the expectations and the commodity price itself.
You could see back in that all the analysts were bullish on the energy, but that's because they're projecting forward a higher oil price
and upgrading their numbers. Yeah. So a few of the other interesting ones I thought out of this, the section on the bottom left, second from the bottom on the left there is, I'm calling the not yet section, whereas you're seeing Live Nation Entertainment, which is Ticketmaster and some other ones, ticket selling mainly in the US. Oriental Land, which is Japanese Disneyland and a few other things like that. Melco Resorts, which is a lot of hospitality and holidaying, in particularly in Asia and Europe. And you can see all those ones. What we've seen is a downgrade to 2022. So quite significant in all those cases, sort of over 20% downgrade to 2022, but simultaneously you've seen an upgrade to 2023. So it's basically okay that the earnings aren't coming yet, but when they come, they're going to be even higher. So
I noticed there's no cruise ships in there.
No, actually, I haven't looked at the cruise ships. Apparently demand's been quite strong.
Not yet for a long while.
Yeah, that's right. Pushed out even further, quite possibly. Mm. So, I think there's there's obviously when you're buying those sectors, it's a question of belief in terms of those. We've got a few travel stocks ourselves, and certainly that's been one area of weakness in the portfolio. I think there are questions about when that does come good, and do you get a do you really get this lockdown reopening? So I've seen England moved to, and the UK moved to sort of the freedom days and things like that. France has come out with some similar sort of statements saying, okay, now it's, for people who don't want to get vaccinated, it's your turn to stay home. They're going to be requiring, signs of vaccine passport type controls, and talking about that in a number of other countries. So, I guess for our perspective, that whole travel is sort of a question about when it's going to come good. Certainly one of the sectors to watch with Delta variants, but we want to keep a reasonable exposure to that sort of bounce back without being at the really risky end, which is, as Radik was talking about, the cruise ships, which are not only might be extended a bit longer and possibly have less demand than before, but also are carrying quite large debt burdens also.
I read this week, I think Ryanair's almost doubled its number of passengers this month, so it's starting.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, US travel's been pretty good, and Europe's certainly opening up as well. Mm. Some of the other ones that I thought was quite interesting, reading from the top left there, the luxury goods, all upgrades by 10 to 20%, or sorry, more like 5 to 15%. So share prices as well, quite strong in that area. The building sector, still seeing strength there within the building stocks. At the bottom left is the lockdown heroes, as they're calling them. So things like Ocado, which is a online grocery store, Citrix, which is a system for communicating over the internet, Clorox, which is a big seller of wipes, was one of the stocks we'd bought a year or so ago as we're going into the lockdowns, and then sold once the virus was sort of out, and the stock had run up a lot. Twilio, which is another online communication, and Lumen, which is a cloud computing. So all those stocks were the real heroes of the lockdowns, but analysts have sort of gone over the top in terms of how much they'd factored in, and so we're actually seeing all those stocks saw downgrades of sort of 20% plus to some of their earnings, sort of showing that as economies coming out of lockdowns, they're starting to go the other direction.
You could also put Amazon into that bucket, I think.
Yes, yeah, yeah, and yes. So they're on the bottom right with the fangs. So they're all the big, these are the mega stocks in the US, across the board, there's been some pretty impressive upgrades to all those companies. But Amazon, as you said, Radik, has gone the other direction. Mm. And that's one of those areas where we've been, our view's been that, look, those stocks, they're not that expensive. So the Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, Google, which is called Alphabet, and some of the others. Well, Snap and Tesla aren't ones in our portfolios, but those other ones are ones where we've been talking about saying, well, we're actually overweight the sector because they haven't been – they're a little bit expensive, but the earnings growth has been so good that it justifies the price. And that's certainly been true over the last few months that the prices have gone up quite significantly, and now the earnings upgrades. You might be able to buy these stocks on 22 or 24 times, and then you get an earnings upgrade, and that sort of brings it back to 20 times earnings, which is a lot more reasonable to be buying these growth stocks at. What else we got there? And the only other one that I thought was of interest there is the private equity. So I think everyone's struggling in this environment trying to find what's cheap. Property is expensive and going up around the world. Share markets are expensive, bond markets are expensive, and there's been this flow into some of these private assets. The view that's saying, well, if it's going to cost me a lot of money to start up to buy an existing company, then maybe it's actually better if I spend that money starting up a new company or putting it into some of these private markets and trying to get some sort of discount. And so it does appear as well that some of those markets are getting expensive, but it's worth noting that all the big private equity fund managers, the guys who are actually taking a clip or taking a margin on all the inflows, are seeing 10 and 20% upgrades to their earnings over the next few years, and strong price performance as well as that demand sort of comes through. Right. So is that one? And then is there any other stock ones, Radek, that you wanted to talk about on those?
No.
On those ones. I don't know if we want to throw open to any questions, but my only other one I want to talk about was just the overall investment outlook following on. But I might, Mark, is there anything else I've missed, I guess, in terms of the earnings season? That
are there any insights for our reporting season, do you think?
Exactly. I was just about to say that. How about a shameless plug about how we did last quarter?
Yeah. Oh, look, absolutely. It's been it's been a reasonable reporting season for us. There's been a number of stocks that we've been sort of buying with a view. So the FANG stocks is one area. Some of the more cyclical stocks, like some of the employment. The ones that are in the employment sector that have done quite well. I think there's the worst place for us has been that whole travel sector. But as Radek said, there's certainly some quite positive signs in terms of the sort of pickups. So the actual results haven't been good, and the first year is 2021 hasn't been good, but 2022 is looking quite good in that area.
We've been underweight energy this month, which, with energy retreating, has actually worked for us.
Yep. And so it's probably a bit of a sign that, as well, for the Aussie market, is worth noting that the banking side is looking through those banking earnings and saying, okay, well, how much of those banking earnings within Australia is write backs? Because the Australian banking sector has been very strong relative to the rest of the world. And sort of working out what's different here to elsewhere. We don't think there is a lot of difference in the Aussie banks versus international, and they're certainly trading. All the Australian banks are trading at a much higher premium to international ones. Is that side? And it's worth noting that the same as what you saw in the energy sector is that in the mining sector as well, and energy within Australia, is even if you are seeing some quite big numbers, which we fully expect, and some upgrades. Doesn't always mean you're going to see the prices move in that same direction. If people are looking at these stocks and in a similar way to what we're looking at them and thinking, well, we're actually getting pretty close to the top. And even though you might get extended, say, higher iron ore prices for another year or so longer than what we're expecting, the longer term signs are certainly still pointing to downside. As we're starting to see some growth slowing, some particularly out of China in particular, there's more signs that the growth is slowing in China. And so that is sort of leads on to our investment outlook. So where are we positioned? So I think that the key one I want to keep coming back to every time here is that markets are very much supported by central banks and government stimulus. So every time we look at anything, we need to always say, well, the big risk at the moment, when you've got expensive markets and central banks pumping lots of money into it, governments pumping lots of stimulus, is if they pull back too quickly, then that's where you start running into some danger signs for the market. So we've sort of got these two scenarios we're weighing up, and both of them are quite significant scenarios. One is the sort of the grind higher, where valuations stay more expensive than in the past, but you keep getting these strong earnings coming through that we've spent a lot of time on today. Really looking at these. If you add another 10 or 15% to earnings, then that actually brings back the median stock, brings it back to pretty close to its longer term averages. And if you sort of take into account low interest rates and all the money being pumped in, then maybe that's a fair trade off. The flip side is we run into this growth hole. We spent a lot of time on that last week, but so sort of highlight, point anyone back to that podcast for who hasn't seen it, but also note that there's an idea that if we don't have enough central bank support and if we don't get enough government support because they sort of feel as if inflation might be an issue and they look at the inventory super cycle, which is a very short-term thing, and they extend that out too far, or they look at China slowing and aren't concerned about it, then in the final thing is, if you get this gap between the US has been spending all this stimulus money on consumers, they're going to start spending on infrastructure, but there's this gap where the consumer's flowing off and the infrastructure hasn't started yet, there's this danger point that the central banks will either start tapering or governments will taper off their support, and then be too slow to react if you do end up with that growth hole. So both of them are quite significant probabilities. And so, very much in our mind from an investment perspective is how do we manage that from keeping enough exposure to the market for the grind higher, but be ready to and watching quite closely for signs that this growth hole is coming.
So on to the viewer question of the week. Will the earnings boom last? Drop your answers in the comments section of our YouTube channel, and we'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to see more of our content, head over to nucleuswealth.com/content. You'll see some of our past episodes, and you might actually, I would highly recommend you listen to the episode from last week, which went in line with what we discussed today about how the earnings and what are the risks of these high earnings and the future outlooks as far as investment portfolios going forward. And thanks again to all those who have watched in live and for another great episode. And thanks also to those who have asked some questions along the way. I hope you've taken away some great ideas. And if you haven't already, feel free to click the like on the video and also to click on the notification bell, just so you know.
Yeah.
Just so you get any future any new videos that come up, which pretty much a weekly basis.
Yep. Actually, Mark, there's a last minute question actually from Danny that might be worth. Running into, just in terms of, I guess Danny's questioning opinions about China continuing to slow over the next 2 decades unless they can convince their one-child adults to have more kids, and potentially turn China into Japan. Look, we're very much on the board with that whole China is probably a bigger issue for China is the structural issues in terms of they're very dependent upon home building, and we've got a couple of podcasts earlier on and a couple of posts up sort of going into a lot more detail about that. And just that they're facing some quite severe demographic issues. They know they need to rebalance their economy away from property and across to more consumption and rebalance away from benefiting companies at the expense of consumers. But it's a very hard thing to do because there's so many vested interests, and we're really hitting an important point in China right now. In terms of looking at that disconnect between corporates and consumers, and saying, will they try and rebalance their economy away from these debt-driven, low productivity sort of housing and infrastructure that they've been doing for the last 10 years and refocusing more on industrial production and consumption, or will they just fall back into the same old ways? And for the moment, they seem to be trying to rebalance, but some big issues in terms of whether that they will actually be able to do that. Now, our bets that the vested interest will probably trump that, and we'll probably see a slowdown in China.
Yeah, I noticed their PMI was exactly 50.1, so technically growth, but interesting.
That's right.
Interesting where it dropped.
Yes, excellent. Okay, sorry to interrupt your.
No problem at all. Yes, like I said, my first time out, I've got looking at three different things happening at the same time, and not sure if I'm coming or going. But yes, for more fun like this. And to make me and to watch me make a fool of myself again, do tune in next week. And thank you for myself, Mark, and the rest of the team here at Nucleus Wealth. And we look forward to catching up with you at the next one. Have a lovely week.